I wonder how everyone's doing. I've been talking to folks lately, and a lot of the people I talk to are pretty worn out from the year. Just deep exhaustion. Some folks feeling anxious. Some folks feeling angry at the continued injustices in our world, in our country. So what a blessing that we can come together and share the practice, just have time to sit quietly, to let things settle, to clear the mind a little bit, and hopefully to renew the spirit, renew the heart, find some restoration. So anyone who's spent time studying the Dharma, practicing, reading, listening to talks, it's so vast. There's so much that one can learn, and so many different meditation practices and techniques and different teachings that can be applied in different ways. Sometimes it's useful to take a step back and really consider, like, what's our practice about? Why are we doing this? What's the aim, and what's the path? Having a strong connection to motivation in any spiritual practice, I think, is essential, because it's not easy. It's hard enough to just be alive. Even if we have the good fortune and privilege of having our basic material needs met and living in a place where it's safe, where we have running water, we're not dealing with war or bombs or hunger, it's still not easy to be human, just to get through a day, to get through a life. Of course, there's joy and happiness and pleasure, and there's all the other stuff. And so staying connected to why we do this practice, for me, has been so important in the times in my life when I lose touch with that sense of my own deep aspiration to be free and to be of benefit to others. It's harder. I feel like I'm drifting, or the practice gets dry. So motivation, and then some sense of what is the practice? What is the path? And there's one particular stanza in one of the oldest Buddhist texts, the Dhammapada, that's very well known throughout the world in all Buddhist cultures and countries. And it's a summary of the teachings in three lines. It says, to abstain from causing harm, or to abstain from evil, to abstain from that which is unskillful, different translations of the first line. To cultivate the good. To engage in what's skillful, and to purify the mind. This is the teaching of all of the Buddhas. So to abstain from harm, to cultivate the good, and to purify the mind. This is the teaching of all of the Buddhas. And the understanding here, what does this mean, all of the Buddhas? I thought there was just the Buddha. Within the Buddhist tradition and traditional Buddhist cultures in Asia, Southeast Asia, South Asia, the understanding is that Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived 2,600 years ago, is the Buddha of our time. But there have been other Buddhas in the past, and there will be other Buddhas in the future. And the Buddha doesn't create the Dharma, the teachings, the natural laws of existence. The Buddha discovers them. The Buddha discovers the Dharma, realizes it. The Dharma is always there. The truth is always the truth. And so this stanza is pointing to that, that all Buddhas throughout eternity wake up to this truth, to this path. And this is one summary of it: to abstain from evil, cultivate the good, purify the mind. So I wanted to talk about this a little bit tonight, just kind of as a guide, and particularly this time of year, kind of the end of the year, the end of a very hard year. The solstice is tomorrow, so it's the shortest day of the year where there's the most dark, the least light. It's as a very potent time to go inward and to really reflect on our aspirations in life, how we're doing, what are we doing, do we need to reorient in any way. So it's no mistake that the stanza, this summary of the Buddha's teachings, begins with an injunction to not cause harm. Abstain from doing that which is unskillful. So the foundation and beginning of this path is a relational sensitivity to life. The recognition of what it is to suffer, to feel pain, to be alone, to feel hurt, to not be included, to not be seen with dignity or respect, to not be able to feed one's family or have a place to live, to be treated with disrespect, to be insulted. We recognize that in ourselves, what it is to suffer, to hurt, to feel pain. And embedded in this teaching, abstain from doing that which is unskillful, is the recognition that we all have that potential, that we've all done unskillful things, that we all can and do cause harm. So there's this very, very sobering and honest assessment of our potential. And at the most fundamental level, we recognize, hey, if I'm not careful, my actions can create pain and suffering in the world, in small and large ways. And in the world that we live in today, where everything is so interconnected, every choice we make is connected to a whole web of relationships. And so to abstain from that which is unskillful, when we really pay attention to it and go deep into it, is a very profound investigation that can revolutionize our whole way of life, our whole way of being on the planet. And this is an invitation also to humility, to recognize that we're not perfect and that that's okay. That there can be a sense of self-acceptance and self-love in this sobering, honest assessment. This is from the Burmese teacher Sayadaw Ujjodhika from his book Snow in Summer. He writes, "I don't want judgment. I want understanding. I am not perfect, so I am scared of those who are judgmental. I want to be left alone. I've done a lot of unwholesome things in my life, but I don't blame myself or others. I'm trying to practice Dhamma, and I'm happy about that." I love that. I love just the simplicity and the gentleness of that sense of, I've done many unwholesome things, and I don't blame myself or others. So as we reflect on this first aspect of the teachings, they're nuances. So in the Buddhist tradition, generally the terms that are used are not good and evil in the way that those concepts are framed in the Judeo-Christian and Greek and Roman traditions. The word in Pali is kusala and akusala. So kusala means roughly translated as skillful, sometimes translated as wholesome, which has more of that Puritan kind of good and bad association, but also means bright. So kusala is sometimes translated as bright, akusala dark, which is, has complexities given the history of anti-blackness and racism. Beautiful, another translation for kusala. So what is meant by this and what makes the distinction between skillful and unskillful is twofold. One, what is the effect of the action? Does it lead to harm or does it lead to benefit? So we can begin to study our actions, our motivations, our speech, our thoughts, and see what's the result. Does this go in the direction of causing more harm and suffering and pain? Does it go in the direction of leading to benefit, connection, uplift, beauty, joy? So we can see externally what's that like, and then we can also investigate and start to become sensitive to what is the internal experience of the motivation and the intentions behind these actions. And we start to develop a feel for what kusala and akusala are like internally. That kusala dhamma, skillful intentions, skillful actions, and in the Buddhist understanding, action is thought, speech, and body, or body, speech, and mind, as it sometimes says. So we don't just do things with our body. Speech is an action that creates karma, creates results for us in the future. And our thoughts are a kind of action, a very subtle mental action. So our thoughts inform the way we show up in the world. Our thoughts create habits, which then lead to saying things and doing things, and they forms into a certain kind of character that we have. So thought, too, is a kind of action in the Buddhist psychology. And we can begin to get a feel for skillful thought, skillful speech, skillful action. It has a tone to it that's uplifting, that's bright, that's whole, that's clear, that's steady, that's reassuring. And unskillful, akusala, it's scattered, it's kind of blurred, or it's sharp or heavy, it's contracted, it's jangled, it's not steady. We can start to feel these energies in the human heart and mind. They reveal themselves to us when we pay attention, and we can come to know their nature. So this is huge, this insight. That not only do our actions have effects, that we can, through our thoughts, our speech, and our actions, create harm or benefit for ourselves and others, but that we can know the difference directly. And yes, of course, we can never predict the results of our actions. The universe is far too complicated to know what the results of our actions will always be. And yet we can reliably know, if you look, if you study your own mind, we can know the difference between coming from a place that's harmful and coming from a place that's helpful. Doesn't always mean that a helpful intention will have a good result. Right? That takes wisdom, that takes skill, that takes timing, information. There's a lot more that goes into it than just our intention. But the intention is where it starts. And if it starts with a poisoned intention, then that's going to carry through to the result. So to abstain from causing harm, sometimes in the Buddhist tradition is talked about living an ethical life. The result of that is called the bliss of blamelessness. And I think all of us know the pain of remorse. This is the opposite, right? When we've said something or done something that hurts, and you can't take it back. Ugh, it's torture. My partner spent some time working at a meditation center for a year, a little over a year. And this was within like the first 6 months that we had met and started dating. And it was her going away party. And she had a hard time there. It was a difficult period for her. And so I didn't realize how important this going away party was for her, because the relationships were challenging. And so I was kind of like, you know, let's get out of here. You've had a hard time, you know. But for her, it was actually really important to have closure and to feel seen and honored at this going away party. And we'd planned a trip. I'm trying to remember even where we were going. I don't even remember where we were going. We planned a trip, and I had made an appointment at this automobile place to have something installed in I had an older car at the time, and to have something installed so you could plug the phone into the radio and like play music from the iPhone, because it was just like a CD player and a radio. And you know, I wanted to have this great trip after her leaving. And anyway, to make a long story short, I was so impatient during the going away party because I had this appointment. I didn't want to be late for it at this auto place to get this thing installed in the car so that we could have this great trip. That after a while, after an hour or so, I made a comment or two about, you know, I think we need to get going. We've got a trip coming. And the party came to a close sooner than it probably would have, because I was like on a schedule because I wanted to do this thing. And we got to the auto place, and she was so angry and in so much pain. She was just crying, so upset that she hadn't spoken up and said, no, let's stay a little bit longer, and that I had kind of pushed a little bit. And I just felt so awful. That in my own kind of rush and, you know, like desire to make everything right and have this perfect thing, and not seeing her and what was important to her, that I just kind of pushed past. And there's no going back. The party was over. I couldn't fix it. I just had to sit with that awful feeling of knowing that I had taken away from someone I loved something that was so important to her. In my own being in my own world and my own schedule and what I thought was important, and not really looking and seeing what was happening, not having the humility to check and say, hey, we've got this appointment. I'm noticing it's getting late. What do you want to do? So to abstain from that which is unskillful also means to open to the pain of having caused harm, because that's where we learn. That's where we learn what it is to be connected, to care, what it is to act out of delusion or greed or hatred. The heart doesn't learn if we don't allow ourselves to really experience those results, to taste the remorse, the heaviness, the contraction, the contrition inside. Then the heart begins to become sensitive. It says, oh, this hurts. I don't want to do this again. How do I keep from doing this again? Ah, I need to pay attention, need to be present, need to stay aware, stay attuned, notice those around me, notice what's happening in my mind. So abstain from that which is unskillful. On the surface, it's just a few words, but it's a very deep practice that can take us very far on the path. And it sets up this relationship. It embeds us in a world of connection. And this brings us to the second part of this teaching, which is to cultivate the good. Engage in that which is skillful. So these are not linear. It's not like you do 1, 2, 3. We cultivate them together. So as we're turning the volume down on the things that are causing harm, we're also turning the volume up on the things that are brightening, uplifting, reassuring, encouraging, steadying for the heart. So this is about recognizing the beauty and the joy that comes when we're aligned with the potential that we have as human beings to help, to give, to care. And the whole foundation of the path, as we know, is dana, generosity, which doesn't mean donating money, right? It means living with a generous heart. It means giving of ourself, our time, our energy, our love, our attention, our skill, our care, being available to serve, to help, being generous with ourselves, being available to take care of ourselves. And this year has been, for anyone who hasn't already been practicing, like a crash course in self-care, right? How do I take care of this mind and body when so many of the things that I've depended on are not available? Including hugs from friends and family. It's hard, right? So we need some way to nourish the spirit. We need some way to uplift and restore the sense of well-being inside. And this is about kusala dhamma. This is about cultivating the good and really relishing, enjoying, celebrating when we do something good. In Asia, at the monasteries, when people offer food, when they offer dana, they come to the monastery and they bring food, it's like the celebratory spirit. There's a rejoicing in it. And when the monks and nuns say thank you, it's anumodana is the word in Pali, anumodana. It's connected to the word mudita, which means appreciative joy. And literally it means something like, I rejoice in your goodness. Isn't that beautiful? I rejoice in your goodness. So what do you see when you look in the mirror? Can you see the good? Or do you only see the shortcomings and the wrinkles? This is a training. We need to remember. Because the world around us isn't reflecting it back to us, right? Our society isn't saying, hey, you have a lot of goodness. You're doing great, right? Our society says you're not good enough. You need one of these. Come buy this and then you'll be better. So that's why the Buddha said this path goes against the stream, against the current of the world, which is about consumption, about getting and having and becoming more. And the direction of the Dharma is about realizing what we already are, what we already have. And in so doing, letting go of the things that don't actually fulfill us. So cultivate that which is skillful. And notice it, rejoice in it. Really, really let it in. Rick Hansen, who many of you know, he's another local Dharma teacher, has done a ton of work on this. And he has that beautiful practice of taking in the good, right? Of lingering with something enjoyable, pleasant, nourishing for at least 20 seconds so that the neurology can actually absorb the healing qualities and potentials of that good action or that wholesome, healthy moment. So this includes also our friendships and our connections. Really paying attention to the people in our lives who are meaningful to us, not taking them for granted. And in the pandemic, that's been hard. You know, even on a Zoom call, it's hard to really feel connected sometimes. You can't hold each other's hands or really share food. It's different. And so this is where the Dharma can really be a support to us to recognize that 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 connection and love are an experience of the heart. It's not an experience of the flesh, even though it often is stimulated by being together, seeing each other, holding each other. But what happens when the people we love pass, when we can't do that anymore because of conditions? Well, that love is still here. It doesn't go away, that connection. Anyone who's lost someone close to you knows, right? They're never far away in your heart. That love, that connection can stay present. And this is why Kalyanamitta, spiritual friendship, spiritual companionship, is such an important part of this path. To feel the goodness, the connection there, and to allow that to uplift us, because we find support, comfort, wisdom, guidance from fellow practitioners on the path. So cultivating the good through our own actions, our own thoughts, words, and deeds, through our relationships, not taking those for granted. One of the teachers that I practice with sometimes, Stephen Smith, who spent many years practicing in Burma, told a story on a retreat recently about one Burmese monk who was purported to be a highly realized master. And they went to see him in his kuti where he was living. And when they left, each person, he took them by the hand and took both of their hands in his hands and grabbed it really tightly and looked in their eyes and said, "May you be free from even one unskillful mind moment." What a beautiful blessing. May you be free from even one unskillful mind moment. How careful are we with our thoughts? Do we cultivate the beautiful and the good in our own mind? And just to notice where your mind goes and to recognize when it's wandering into territories and neighborhoods that aren't so safe for your own well-being, and to pull it back. So these two, to abstain from that which is unskillful and to cultivate that which is skillful, they acknowledge the importance of the relative world, our relationships, our actions, and invite us to get to know our own heart and mind more clearly. To get intimate with the intentions and motivations and thoughts that are running through every day, and to start to direct, to shape that flow of energy and intention in a very specific direction. And that starts to create the conditions for the third part of the teaching, which is to purify the mind. What does that mean? We're really coming from the Western tradition with the kind of here in the United States with the history of the Puritans. Sometimes it doesn't sit so well because it can call up, you know, notions of original sin, which can be complicated emotionally, psychologically, depending on one's own history with organized religion. And what's meant here is to free the mind, and the word mind in the Dharma, as many of you know, is heart mind. It's chitta. It's the heart and the mind, the seat of conscious awareness. To free the chitta from the entanglements and the deeply rooted tendencies that get us stuck, that block us from recognizing our true nature of wakeful awareness, of freedom. So purifying the mind includes noticing where those intentions to cause that cause harm, where they come from inside. And through the practice of presence and meditation, transforming those tendencies through clear seeing. The power of awareness is innately to purify. When we see clearly the cause of suffering, the heart lets go, it puts it down because we don't want to suffer. So the trajectory of the path is always towards being less violent, more patient, more loving, more peaceful, less agitated. And that comes through the purification of clear seeing, of examining and coming into relationship with our life directly. Coming into relationship with the heart and the mind directly. And what do we see? What is revealed? We start to see how much we want to control things. You close your eyes and sit for a little while and you'll see we want something else to be happening. I don't want this to be happening. I want that to be happening instead. I like this. I don't like that. This controlling tendency, always trying to control, to make it my way, resisting, manipulating experience. The point is to get familiar with those tendencies, to get intimate with them so that we can understand them. And it's through the understanding and clear seeing of those tendencies that they begin to unravel, that we see them for what they are: energies, habits. It's not who we are. And not only that, energies and habits that are not in our best interest. And in that clear seeing, they release themselves. There's nothing we need to do. But to do that, to really look closely and intimately at the tendencies of our heart and the nature of the world takes a lot of love, which is why we need to abstain from that which is unskillful and cultivate that which is skillful, to create the conditions where there's enough stability and warmth and kindness inside to really start to see clearly. And we see a world of change, of instability, of uncertainty. And we see these tendencies to control as a strategy to just try to get by in a world that's out of control, where everything's changing, where we don't know who we are, where we came from. And so the heart grabs on because it doesn't know what else to do. But as we develop more awareness, as we develop more love and compassion through the practice, that tendency to hold on, to control, to resist, we don't need it anymore because we have something else more steady to rely on. The light of awareness and the warmth of love. So as the year draws to an end, as we enter the solstice, this teaching is a powerful one to reflect on, to abstain from that which is unskillful, to cultivate that which is skillful, and to purify the mind, to come into relationship with the way things are, and know and observe the tendencies that are there in our heart. Allow them to be known, allow them to be seen, and in that seeing, to let them pass. So I offer these thoughts for your reflection tonight. Thank you so much for your kind listening. We have a little bit of time if there are any questions. We could do maybe a couple of questions before we close. So if you have a question, you can type it in the chat. or raise your hand. Oh, and someone's reminding me, thanks, Corey, about Dana. So Marin Sangha and my teachings are offered freely. And this is a way to keep the community going. I know it's been a hard year economically for many. If you're in a position to give, you have resources to share. There are links in the chat to support my work on my website and also to support the Marin Sangha. And we're really grateful for your support. And if you have any questions, you can type them in the chat or just raise your hand virtually or literally just wave at me and I will respond. Sure. So there's another question here in the chat that I'll read aloud. You mentioned in the guided meditation, what is occurring is less important than your awareness of what is occurring. Could you elaborate on that, please? I find it fascinating and illuminating. Sure. So many meditation techniques focus on the object of meditation, what's happening. So pay attention to the breath, notice the in-breath, notice the out-breath, body scan, notice the sensations, notice the sensations. And this is helpful. It strengthens mindfulness and concentration. But the nature of all phenomena, all experience is the same. The universal nature of any experience, any sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, thought, emotion, intention, is what? It's to change. It's temporary. It's not reliable. It's not personal. So what's happening is less important than whether or not we're aware. It's the awareness that matters. Meditation is about strengthening the mind. It's about strengthening mental qualities and deepening awareness. So the objects of attention are there to help reveal and strengthen the awareness. So what's important is the awareness and the relationship to what's happening. Am I getting entangled with what's happening? Am I trying to control it? Am I resisting it? So I hope that helps to clarify it. Another question here from Aliyah, and then Nathan, I see your hand. Okay, that was more of a comment. So Nathan, let's go to you and then we'll see if I can answer the other question there too. Please.
Hey, Oren, what's up? Thank you for tonight.
Sure. Great question. Thank you. Thanks, Nathan. So I'll just repeat it for the recording here. It's just a question about confusion over the results of what's beneficial or harmful. And sometimes it's not so clear, particularly if we're like letting go of something and there's pain involved. So it's a really thorny area because it's so complex, right? And people much smarter than I am have written a lot of philosophy about this. I think it's important to not confuse or equate unpleasant and discomfort with harm, right? Those are different. Something can be unpleasant, it can be uncomfortable, but not necessarily be harmful. And oftentimes those get conflated. Two, it's important to distinguish. So in the Buddhist psychology, any action is broken down into three parts. There's the intention, where it's coming from. There's the skillfulness of the execution, and then there's the result. The first two are within our domain of influence, the third is not. So we can have some influence over our intention, we can choose consciously where we're coming from, sometimes it's mixed, we can lean into the wholesome intentions. We can bring awareness and skill and wisdom and information and counsel and guidance to the skillfulness of our implementation of how we're acting, and then the results are out of our hands. So in the Buddhist tradition, the teaching is actions motivated by greed, hate, delusion, and their subsidiaries are unskillful. Actions motivated by wisdom, generosity, and compassion and their subsidiaries like gratitude, joy, patience, and so forth are skillful. So the Buddhist tradition points to the root of the action mostly, because the result is out of our hands. So, I think we need to use common sense and our own wisdom in looking at the results of actions. And we can recognize that sometimes we can have a very good intention and we can, you know, do something in what we think is a skillful way, and it can still unintentionally cause harm. From the perspective of the Buddhist psychology, we still want to be accountable. And in terms of karma and our own mind, if we're bringing wisdom to bear and we're coming from a skillful intention, we're not creating negative karma. That's my understanding of the teachings, at least. So last one here from Jolene. Any suggestions for dealing with chronic tinnitus during meditation, this ringing in the ear? I find it doesn't completely dominate my ability to sink into meditation, but it is nonetheless a very powerful distraction. Yeah, definitely. So very common experience in meditation. And there's a few options. So one is to do what I think you're already doing, which is to just simply let it be there in the background. You don't have to focus on it. You don't have to make it go away. Sometimes it'll come into your awareness. You'll be aware of it. Other times it's more in the margins or the background, and that's fine. It's totally legit way of practicing. Yeah, you just treat it like another thought. It's just a sound. Notice hearing. Come back to anything else that's happening. There is also the option of focusing on it, and this itself is its own kind of meditation technique. It's called sometimes it's called the nada sound, or the sound of silence, that ringing inside. It's an inner sound. And because it's so continuous for some people, that can become the object of your meditation for concentration practice, not so much for insight, but to steady the mind and to come into a place of more stability and get collectedness. You can just focus on the sound and just notice hearing, and keep focusing on the sound, and let your mind become very still and very connected to that one sound. Okay, friends, I'm going to turn it over to Bill, who's going to read our metta cards. So maybe, Bill, before you start, we'll just take a moment to let the words settle.